He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
We are in the middle of late spring, I guess, in our show area, and lots of things are going on, mostly frustrating things having to do with filling our cars, vehicles, trucks, whatever, with fuel at the prices that keep going up, not coming down. Things to notice in the driving world that I have noticed are that some people are actually driving more slowly. I think I'm noting that pickup drivers seem to be, some of them at any rate, are driving more slowly, probably because pickups, maybe Jeep Wranglers and Broncos and the like, in my opinion, get such miserable general gas mileage, no matter what the price of gas is, that they are realizing that when you now pay almost $50 or more to put 10 gallons of gas in your vehicle, it's a pretty expensive charge if you do a lot of driving on a monthly basis. Jay, you might or may not feel the same way about driving. You do so much driving between and long distances. Are you finding it harder to make efficient time in getting from A to B because you're stuck behind people going more slowly or not?
I'm always stuck behind people.
Well, you're always going faster.
But I honestly, I have not noticed a difference in traffic behavior, any slowdowns. But I don't know, maybe you're right. It could be. I do notice a difference at the pump. I had to put some premium gas yesterday in the car, and it was $5.99. So you know, we talk about this price of gas going into the well into the $4 now, and that's one thing. But if you're driving a diesel vehicle like mine, or a premium gas powered vehicle, which a lot of vehicles around here, around anywhere, a lot of premium brand vehicles run only on premium gas, and there's a whole extra dollar right there, which shocks me even more, the difference between regular gas and premium gas. So now you're talking $6 a gallon for a lot of these people. And granted, if you're driving a premium vehicle, maybe the $6 a gallon doesn't really change your life, but it's still
probably true.
but it's still a lot of money, and $50 in a gas tank doesn't put you a lot of gas. But I do see. There's official statistics for that, and we don't need to elaborate too much. But the price of diesel has kind of tapered off, it seems, or anyway, relative to the price of gas, and certainly relative to the price of premium, it's not as crazy as it once was. Although it's still in the high fives, $5.89 or things like that. So, yeah, but I don't see any difference in driving behavior. That's me personally.
I would say on the interstate, or let's say the multi-lane highways, I would agree with you. I think it's just sort of maybe on some of the two-lane roads. You and I both make long-distance trips down Route 22 and on to 684 and wherever else you go in different directions on those trips. And once you get on the three-lane, two-lane, three-lane roadways going in both each direction, you can pick a lane in which you can make your usual time, distance, speed, trip at the same relative time distance and, well, arrival time that you've been using all along. But it's on these back roads, and maybe they just – everybody's going slower on the back roads, but there's some back roads that you and I both use getting to the faster roads. And I've noted that when I get behind pickups these days that in the 40 to 45 mile an hour road range, they're actually going that rate instead of maybe 50 or 55, which I noticed that more people seem to use to do before the gas got to where it is, and diesel, of course. Enough. We don't need to talk much more for that for our listeners. But the way I've been measuring My vehicle efficiency factor is in the trip that I go regularly between Sharon and New Canaan, Connecticut, which is 63 miles door to door. And, I set my trip computers on to showing the mileage and the miles per gallon that you get. And I am fighting to keep my ability to get those 63 miles done in roughly 2 gallons of gas, which requires you to be getting 30 miles per gallon, a little bit more, average between point A and point B when you started off. That's how I'm driving as a result of it. Yes, I'm not going 75 to 80 on 684, which I used to do sometimes. I'm going 72, and I can see my instant mileage per gallon rating achieving 30 to 34 miles a gallon on two of my vehicles, or 30 to 40 miles a gallon on two of the vehicles that I use between these trips. If you look at it, you know what a Jeep Wrangler gets, or a Bronco, or that kind of, or a pickup truck, you're probably using at least 1 gallon more, maybe two in some cases, for that same distance. And at probably at $4.50 a gallon, or $4.40 a
Yeah, or a
gallon.
lot more if you're.
Yeah. So that's how I've been measuring efficiency, efficient driving situations. Moving on, I'm also noting in various situations, in my opinion, that fewer people use it. I mean, this problem that we've been ranting about on, or at least I have,
Oh God, oh boy, here we go on a rant.
about avoid not using your turn signals when, if the car's coming at you or coming before you or going ahead of you, before they make a sharp turn to the left or right. It seems to be an increasing disease. Enough on that. You want to comment, you can. But I wish drivers would be attentive to what they to their signaling when they're going to turn off the main byway that they're going on, so that they don't cause a potential accident issue occurring if somebody were not to notice that they were going to make
Yeah,
a turn.
signals is not only an obligation, but it's also a form of courtesy behind the wheel. And you just find that a lot of people are just oblivious to what's going on around them. I tend to use my signals, like if I'm making a turn off a main road and I know I'm going to be making a left-hand turn and I might be holding up traffic, I put my left-hand signal way in advance, giving people the opportunity to back off and slow down and not come to a stop behind me, as opposed to putting my signal on at the last minute. So
That's
again,
very
I
true.
think signaling is
Yeah, I guess you could just say that courtesy in the driving world seems to be decreasing in terms of doing little things like that maybe a few years back we noticed were occurring more frequently and more appropriately. I definitely agree with you about turning the signal on well before you're going to intentionally make the turn. The
Okay,
alternative
so
is you ought to learn to
I,
turn it off if you don't make the turn because they don't cancel sometimes.
well, yeah, and you have the cars with the self-canceling signals, and then they all behave a little differently. Sometimes you try to turn off a signal that's going to turn off itself, and now you have the signal going on the other way, and then you try to overcorrect, and then it goes
Very
left and
true.
right and left and right, and we've all done that, and we feel
Yes.
kind of a little stupid doing so, but I guess you just have to figure out how the signals work on your car. I
I
was
don't
gonna.
know whether we can blame it on people on their phones at the same time. I tend to think that people are using their phones quite frequently while they're driving, and they have to hold their phone in one hand if they don't have Bluetooth in their cars. And the older cars don't, the newer cars do. But you still see people. I see people when I pull up beside them at a stoplight on a multi-lane thing, their eyes are looking down at something that is in their hand. So if even if they have Bluetooth, maybe they're holding their phone. And if you have a phone in your hand and one hand on the steering wheel, it's hard for you to turn the signal light on, turn to move the signal stalk to use it properly. I guess we can move on. Well, I'm just turning it over to you. The new cars, you get to drive more new cars than I will ever do on a weekly or monthly basis. So
Well, Are you?
I tend to drive this, some of the same cars, time and time over, and there's cars I like, and there are cars I like more and cars I like less. I hate saying this. I mean, recently I drove another. I still think the electric Porsche Macan is a fantastic SUV. I know it's a $100,000 vehicle, so of course I went online. I went to on Car Gurus and tried to see if we started to see any used electric Macans, and there are very few, but there are a few, but they're still only 2 years old, and they're still this $100,000 car is now a $70,000 car for a 2-year-old car, and it gets us to the bigger picture of depreciation of cars and how quickly a car depreciates and when should you turn it in. Or should you turn it in, and what can you do to keep the values of cars up? And so I was reading a few articles on that subject as well. And my rule of thumb is that a car will depreciate by 50% over 5 years. And if a car depreciates more than that, then maybe it's a great car to buy as a used car. And I've talked with you a lot about that off the air, about how I think Alphas, Stelvios and Giulias are probably a great deal if you like that type of car. Because after all the asking around I've done about the reliability of these cars, they turn out to be quite reliable, yet they sell in very few numbers. And I think there's a stigma about the Alpha brand that makes it that as used cars, they just don't sell very well. So I'm looking at one of those, for instance. On the other hand, on the other side of the spectrum, you have brands like Toyota that because they are Honda.
Honda, because they are extremely reliable, tend to keep their value above that 50% after 5 years or 70% retaining value after 3 years, and they're not such a great buy as new cars. In fact, for years, I know people who've leased Hondas and Toyotas and turn them in and at the end of the lease and have money down for their next car and keep leasing cars by trading in their cars at the end of the lease deal. So, where was I going with this? Yeah, the depreciation of cars. And, back to the question, should you buy a new car? Should you lease a car? Should you buy a used car? I'm definitely in the camp of people who are looking for great buys in the used car market. Freshly used, but still used. And that's how I've bought my last cars. But that's my little take on depreciation.
Well, I've been watching a lot of car ads for our listeners' benefit. I saw something that made me really take a second look at whether I should go lease a Cadillac Electric. There was a Cadillac Electric lease on, I don't know, a sports show, I think I saw over this last weekend before the show was done. And it had a lease for one of the Cadillac brands at like $600 a month for a vehicle that I think is probably up in the $60,000 to $80,000 price range. I don't remember what the model was. What I don't know is what the money down had to be before you started. Maybe it's $2,500 down. And I couldn't believe that a Cadillac could be leased for that inexpensive level figure. I don't want anybody to go fact check me on this, but leases have been the one way that manufacturers or and dealers have been able to move these higher priced vehicles, or the higher prices of vehicles, which we have said on this show have now escalated from the mid 30s to the mid 40s to close to $50,000, I believe, for the average sale of new cars. And they keep going up, but the depreciation doesn't change necessarily in your earlier comments on depreciation of certain brands. They do last longer. There's no reason to buy new, I don't think, in many lines of vehicles if you can get a recently off lease. And those leases are usually 3-year leases with mileage in the between 30 and 40,000 miles put on the cars by their users, which are nothing in terms of aging of vehicles these days. as you have said, and I agree with, because I think new vehicles properly maintained, and that means proper, you know, regular oil changes, make sure the brakes are in good condition, are maintained throughout their lease vehicle, they can go for another 100,000 miles, maybe easily, above those 30 to 40,000 miles that may be on the car that you are purchasing. And you certainly do buy them at a more favorable cost to value of the vehicle at that point relationship than I think you do buying a brand new one out off the dealer lot and driving it off the lot, never to see that value retained by its vehicle again.
Well, some cars do, but very few.
Well, Porsches. I want to talk about Ford. I want to talk this about an affordable car index as opposed to some of the exotics, which do hold their values low, as you have pointed out several times.
Affordability is all relative, but anyway.
Yes, it is.
I still think that, you know, and we talked about this previously. You know, if you want an electric car, there are 2023. Lease cars getting off lease now, and there's a bunch of good buys, you know, in the electric car market. On the low, on the affordable, more affordable side of the equation, you can get a Chevy Bolt for $15,000 to $20,000. You can also get a top of the line Mercedes EQS, which is $120,000 to $110,000 car. You can find them for $45,000 to $50,000. So there's everything in between. But moving on from that,
yeah.
I, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to start talking about different brands and the ones I thought may make it and others may not. But, Robin, you certainly remember this, if your memory still serves you, Geo, remember Geo back in
yep.
the day? So I read a little bit about the Geo brand. So Geo came about, it was a GM brand that came about, I'm going to say in the 70s, maybe. I'm not exactly sure when the first Geos came out, but basically the big three at the time were facing stiff competition from the Japanese brands, Toyota, Honda, and they were just getting beaten into the ground with product that were superior in quality and more affordable. And Ford and GM's responses with the Pintos and the Vegas were just left a bad impression of what the quality of these vehicles were. And GM at the time just said, well, let's just buy something and rebadge it. And sure enough, they made deals with Suzuki and Toyota. And we started seeing Trackers and Geo Metros and Prisms, yeah. And the Prism was a small sedan made alongside the Toyota Corolla in a factory that was co-owned by Toyota and GM. And anyway, and the brand, the Geo brand, served GM for a few years, and then they killed the brand. And it seems like in this case, it was part of a short to medium term strategy, and not a brand that was out there to take over any of their other brands. But anyway, it came, it was here, and now it's gone. And in the meantime, I believe, if I am correct, that factory was then sold to Tesla, and that's where Tesla started making their first cars, in that factory. That was obviously modified quite a bit. So that's a little Geo story. Did you ever own a Geo?
No, I did not. But when you were discussing the Geo brand, I was thinking of the Saturn brand that GM brought out. Essentially a plastic car vehicle too, body wise.
Yeah, but the
and you talk about short term longevity in some of these lines of vehicles that the American manufacturers bring out, hoping to counter the trends coming in from the imports. It keeps bringing back my comment that the American manufacturers seem to have a short-term duration of tolerance for success in sales of some of these brands that they bring forth. And they think they've got a good thing going, and then it doesn't sell in what they deem to be sufficient numbers to keep the production lines going. And so they die. And then, 10 or 15 years later, you start seeing some of these vehicles on the road again. I don't know where they've been hiding, but I have not seen any Saturn, so I can't say that Saturn is an example. But there could be some Geo still running around for all I know.
There probably are. I'm sure there are. I'm trying to think of the last time I saw one, but to comment on Saturn, I believe the Saturn brand came out at about the same time, but now my memory is
I think
failing
you're
me.
right. I think it did come out back in the 70s.
But the idea with Saturn was twofold. One, an original product, with that plastic
No rust
body.
body.
No rust body, and also a sales model that was aimed at no haggling, and they wanted to GM wanted to introduce the no haggling, one price, same price for everybody,
Correct.
and walk in the dealership, whatever the price was, that's what you paid, and that's what you walked out, paying. It didn't work out.
Yeah, well,
Honestly.
seldom do they.
Dealer
Yeah.
networks are very powerful, quote unquote, institutions, and they were not going to let this happen. And the model just sank. And for a brief moment back then, I thought, oh boy, this is genius. But yeah, no, it didn't work out. So no more Geos, no more Saturns. This rebranding other products, both Ford and GM did that. I'm thinking of the the Mercours that Ford came out with, which were
Oh yes, the
European Fords
Mercour.
that were rebranded. Cadillac earlier in the 80s came out with the Cimarron, which was an Opel that they rebranded as a Cadillac. What a disaster that was. So yeah, American manufacturers have not been too successful in rebadging product that they've either bought off the shelf or actually had in were selling overseas through some of their subsidiaries.
Well,
Like
Jaguar
Ford
was
is.
part of that too. When Ford owned Jaguar, they thought they had purchased a vehicle that was going to be very successful, or purchased a company that was going to be very successful in the U.S. And I don't think they, I think they ended up letting go of Jaguar in less than 5 years after they purchased it.
Yeah, that whole concept of the Ford Premier Group, I plead guilty to thinking it was genius at the time. Ford was acquiring a bunch of brands, including luxury brands, and yes, the
GM also
smaller
bought Saab,
Jaguar,
remember? You talked about GM and
no,
Saab.
GM owned Saab. They killed Saab in the
Yeah.
Depression of the in the crisis of 2008, but the smaller Jaguar, the one that was made to look like yours, like an XJ, and that was part of the probably a
Yeah.
bad marketing decision on Jaguar's part. The smaller one, what is it called? I don't even
It was,
remember.
I think it was a Ford Mondeo
It
platform or something,
absolutely, yep, it
with a
was.
V6 engine,
Correct.
and it was like a junior XJ series, which I think was a very good looking vehicle, and I own a 2004 XJ, as I've said previously on the show, and it still looks as great today as I bought it and purchased it in 2004 or 2005 off lease from a company, from a Jaguar dealer. But the little one just never caught my favor in terms of being a practical, a successful line of vehicles, because you just can't just miniaturize a line and think that the public's going to go out and buy that same looking car in a junior size.
However,
However.
the The station wagon version of that car was
Was
pretty
interesting.
cool.
Yes, it
Was even,
was.
however,
It
again,
didn't
however,
sell.
to, it didn't sell, and we know what the fate of wagons is in this country. So much for rebadging, and having sometimes mediocre product, sometimes not too bad product, but still, rebadging is a quick fix that seldom works long term.
I agree. Seldom works long term. Now let me just go back and cover something in our final few minutes here. When you're buying a pre-owned car, I never have been necessarily a fan of extended warranties, but I put extended warranties on my Carvana Jeep, a Jeep I bought new, which these are all Cherokees that I bought new for my wife back in 2020, and a Jeep that I had in 2014. And the one thing I've discovered about, and there's a lot of marketing going on TV and on radio about trying to sell extended warranties to people buying used cars. One of them says up to 200,000 miles. A warning to all people who want to listen to this part about extended warranties. I have discovered that if the cost of a breakdown of a car that has an extended warranty exceeds the value of the car at the time that it happens. And I don't know any car with 200,000 miles would be worth more than $1,000 used. They do not pay for an engine replacement, full cost of a repair that is more than the car itself is worth at the time you want to turn in and get the money, get your repair done, thinking you bought a repair that, you'll never have to pay full price for an engine or a full, or a transmission or something that is extensive, a much bigger repair item than a cost of a strut in the front suspension. So it's very, the warning is if you're going to take on and look at the look at into these extended warranty programs, and they are not quite a dime a dozen, but there are probably a half a dozen different plans out there. And this is outside of the manufacturer's ability to offer you an extended warranty. This is not a manufacturer. It seems to have the same caveat about it. If the repair becomes more expensive than the value of the car at the time you seek a repair through your extended warranty, watch out because you may find that they will not foot the full cost of that repair if the car itself is not worth the same amount or more than the cost of the repair will be.
Yeah, and that's
And these repair warranties are going up. I mean, you can buy them by the month. You can be paying $300 a month, which would be $3,600 a year. And you might buy it for 30 months. I did the math on one of them, and I'm glad I bought the extended warranties I did on the vehicles because I've had minor repairs, all of which have been covered. But I have yet, I was almost tested on a transmission problem for my 2014 Jeep. And that's when I discovered that the lifetime warranty, which was a Chrysler, then Chrysler Jeep warranty, not an independent, said the same thing that the independent warranties did, that, oh, the transmission's going to cost you $10,000. Your vehicle's worth $2,500, which meant that they would have given me a check for $2,500, and I would have had to pay the balance if I had needed a new transmission, which I fortunately have found I do not need.
And those warranties, not to be confused with prepaid maintenance from
Correct.
dealerships,
Yep.
which can or cannot be worthwhile. You got to do the math. I'm not sure they are worthwhile, but
The ones I have used have been worthwhile. I buy 3-year programs, 3 oil changes, tire rotation, and the like, and it has come out to be roughly one third less than if I were waiting for the do it on the per need cost factor as you take the car in because the labor rates are going up and the material rates are going up. Oil's now higher per quart, the hourly rate to do it. So I do think the prepaid maintenance program should be looked into very carefully by anybody wanting to try to save money over a 3 or 4 or 5 year period. And with that, we will end this week's show of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach. So until next time, thanks for listening.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.